Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week, I talked to Justice Minister Andrew Little on the government's reform on rental laws, a new national interest test on selling assets, and his thoughts on the current situation regarding New Zealand First. But I first asked him about the Pike River mine. Pike River mine disaster, it was the 9th anniversary 2 years ago. Were there any events commemorating that?
Down at Greymouth, there were the families. They wanted to take it pretty quietly this year. They had their own personal observance. They didn't go up to the mine site this time. The portal is pretty busy there at the moment, preparing for the next phase of the re-entry and recovery. Unfortunately, because of other work in Wellington, I was not able to be on the coast this time. I didn't participate in any particular observance myself, except that, you know, funny enough, at around about that time of the day that the explosion happened on the 19th of November, I have this weird kind of eerie sort of moment where I suddenly look at my watch and lo and behold, it's about 3:45. So that was the closest I got to an observance.
The work is now continuing on at Pike River for recovery. What is the progress so far?
It slowed a bit in the last few weeks. We broke through the 30-metre barrier 2 or 3 months ago. We're at the 170-metre barrier. Between the 30-metre barrier and the 170-metre barrier, there was quite a bit of stuff that had to be removed, so that's all been done. There's been some other preparatory work throughout the rest of the length of the long tunnel, which is called the drift, and we're now just waiting final approval from WorkSafe on the next steps. The next step will be removal of the 170-metre barrier, and then it should be reasonably consistent progress throughout the rest of the tunnel. But we need that clearance from WorkSafe before we can take the next step.
Are there any estimations how long will that take?
Hard to know. And I don't want to be in the position of, you know, appearing to put pressure on WorkSafe. They've got a very responsible job to do. We've worked very closely with WorkSafe. The principal priority of the whole operation, this whole operation, has been safety first, and no more lives being put at risk. So we approach these things very cautiously, very carefully, and we just await WorkSafe's final determination.
Moving on to one of the government's major policy announcements this week, there is going to be a change on rental law. So how is this going to benefit tenants?
Well, you know, a third of New Zealanders now live in rented accommodation. It is a feature of our kind of accommodation market, and it's no longer just, you know, young folks in the early, either as students or the early part of their working lives. It's actually families are living in rented accommodation. A lot of adults now expect only to be in rented accommodation. So there does need to be some security. So, for example, having abolishing no-fault terminations so that you actually have to have cause, a landlord has to have cause to terminate, I think will make a huge difference. It gives people a sense of security. The reality is that there are a lot of tenants who, they're in rented accommodation, but it is their home, and they make the little sort of comforts and small modifications that you'd expect to make a home, and they do that. But they, you know, they're entitled to have a level of security of tenure about that. If they breach their tenancy obligations, then of course there's grounds then to terminate the tenancy. But, you know, the reality is, we have seen evidence of situations where a landlord just routinely evicts tenants who are up with their rent, doing everything right, complying with all their obligations, but the landlord thinks that, for example, they can get a higher level of rent if they turf out the current tenants and get in some new ones. So it's about saying that, you know, there's got to be greater security, particularly where you've got families involved.
But some landlords have now complained that these new rules could be much more difficult for them to evict troublesome tenants. What's your response to that?
Well, if they're a troublesome tenant, then they're troublesome because they're breaching their tenants' obligations, in which case you do have cause to evict. I've heard those claims by landlords or landlord representatives. I've heard nothing convincing about it. The examples I've heard given about why it may be harder simply don't stack up. If a tenant is in breach of their tenancy obligations, then you have grounds to take action. And if it's low level and repeated, you can evict after a period of time. If it's significant and egregious, you can evict pretty much straight away. But But if your tenant does nothing wrong as a model tenant, as most tenants are, and indeed as, you know, most landlords are actually, then there's nothing wrong, and you get, the tenant has the benefit of greater security of tenure.
Recently, the government has announced they haven't built enough Kiwi-built homes on schedule, and News Hub said yesterday that the government can't sell them to Housing New Zealand due to design standards. Do you think putting more restrictions on landlord will only continue lower supply on the rental market and as a result push up rents even more?
No, I mean, we have a constrained market at the moment, but it's been around for some time, and that's why we're doing everything we can to add to the housing stock. Some of that is through Kiwi Build. There's other private developments happening as well. So no, I don't think these measures are going to prevent those who wish to invest in residential property as an investment and take on tenants from doing so. The rules are not onerous. Yes, they are. They afford greater security of tenure for some tenants. Do they impede a landlord protecting their investment and doing what they want to do? No, there's no impediment to that at all. So I don't think it's going to have an impact at all on available housing stock and the pressure we need to grow housing stock.
One major story this week in Wellington is New Zealand First. They are discovered to be receiving donations from unknown sources in the form of party loans. So what's your thoughts on this current situation?
As I understand, the allegation is that they have a foundation. They're not the only political party to have that. There's a kind of a third party outfit operating within the party that is making loans to the party for the party's actual political work. There's nothing in the law that impedes that. Whether or not there's some sort of impropriety because of the way donations are being channelled, I think that has yet to be established. I think the Electoral Commission, as a result of inquiries made to it, is taking an interest in it. As the Minister responsible for electoral matters and the Electoral Commission, it's wrong for me to be getting too heavily into the issue while the Electoral Commission, as an independent body, commences an investigation, at the very least a preliminary one. So I don't wish to be drawn on that. I stand by the integrity of our Electoral Commission. They are very thorough. They set a very low threshold before they refer something on for more serious investigation. And ultimately, if they do think there's something there, they can refer it to the police, and it'll be for the police to investigate. So that's the process that would take place.
Let's talk about Labour a little bit more. Does Labour have a similar third-party foundation that gives out loans to the party, like New Zealand First?
No, we don't.
Well, we're talking about party donations. Last year we had Jamie Lee Ross telling the press that the National Party has been receiving foreign donations, and now this year we have the situation at New Zealand First. Is it time to have a look at our party donation laws?
Yeah, I think in a regime where political parties are dependent on getting donations to fund their activities and run their campaigns, it's important that there is transparency. We have the laws that we have at the moment. I mean, after every general election, we have the Justice Select Committee does an inquiry and makes recommendations about that. And there have been, after the last few elections, there have been the odd sort of minor recommendation or tweak that has been made. The committee charged with reviewing the last general election is taking a phenomenally long time, and in reality is being blocked by National from reporting back. I know they've been looking into all these sorts of things. The reality is that we have run out of time to do anything comprehensive in terms of donations reform. The advice I've had is that actually the whole of the Electoral Act could do with a ground-up review, but even if we were to start that now, it wouldn't have any impact on the next general election. So certainly what I'm very keen to see is if we are re-elected in the next general election is to commission that full-bodied review of our electoral laws. What the advice I've received is that our Electoral Act, even though it's 1993, it's really the 1956 Act with MMP added to it. Not a lot changed between 1956 and 1993 in terms of the drafting of the law. And actually, we do need to have a good look at it. And the world is changing, too. We've seen all around the world, the efforts now made to interfere in general elections and undermine them, undermine their integrity. We need to have a law that is fit for that, to deal with that risk, and that includes donations. And so I think there are definitely grounds to have a good, thoroughgoing, comprehensive look at it. In the end, these things required a degree of consensus across political parties. That sounds a bit self-interested, but that's the way law changes of this nature get made.
Right. Finally, for today, there is another policy announcement by the government about a test of national interest while selling high-risk assets. Now, while announcing this, Assistant Finance Minister David Parker said this is to, quote, control those investments that pose a significant risk to our national security and public order. What sort of actors are posing these risks?
Oh, I think people from offshore who want to take advantage of, for example, businesses who are investing in science and innovation, and whether it's benign science and innovation such as in agriculture, food manufacturing, or whether it's industrial. And we want to make sure that those who are investing and getting the benefit of those sorts of activities in New Zealand have, you know, are not going to use it for nefarious purposes abroad. There's things like the media. So we have some ethnic media where the ownership can be traced to, you know, classic as Chinese media, interest can be tracked back to the Chinese government and used for propaganda purposes. So we're alert to all those sorts of things. We want to make sure that investments or overseas investors investing in New Zealand are doing so for reasons that not just serve their purposes but are healthy for New Zealand as well.
The government has already banned overseas investors from buying property, and now this national interest test. Has these measures dampened overseas investors' interest into investing in New Zealand?
No, don't seem to have done that. There's a lot of interest from overseas in New Zealand businesses, particularly, you know, in those areas we perform well in, which is in food manufacturing, food and beverage sort of manufacturing, some industrial manufacturing. So there's no lack of interest in that. But it is about providing, you know, an appropriate level of safeguard to make sure that we're not having investors coming to New Zealand who want to use the benefit of our skills and technology and knowledge to do things that are harmful, if not to us, possibly to others in other parts of the world. And I think it is right that we protect ourselves against that.
Is the government going to do anything to maintain this level of interest?
Oh, yeah, sure. We have a major operation at New Zealand Trade and Enterprise Organisation is in, you know, many countries around the world, leading trade initiatives and trade delegations, and, you know, selling the benefits of investment in New Zealand. So that's been around for a while. That's ongoing, and they do a very good job.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little.
The Wire. That was me.